Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus. Just about the only good thing to result from that February snowstorm that postponed the Selected Shorts taping at Troy Savings Bank Music Hall is that it gives us a chance to catch up with Jim True Frost here in April. He'll be among the actors at Sunday's rescheduled show at 3 o'clock in Troy. WAMC is co-sponsoring the event. A veteran of stage and screen, True Frost has appeared on Hostages, American Odyssey, Boardwalk Empire, Tremé, The Hudsucker Proxy, and Singles, to name a few. A member of Chicago's Steppenwolf Theater, he's also appeared on Broadway in productions like August Osage County, The Rivals, and The Grapes of Wrath. Jim True Frost is perhaps best known for his 5 years as police officer-turned-math teacher Roland Presbyluski on HBO's The Wire. Jim True Frost, welcome to The Roundtable.
Thanks, Ian. Hi, it's great to be with you.
So how did you get involved with doing these Selected Short shows?
The first one I did was in Chicago. It must have been 10 or 15 years ago. It was a long time ago, and it was a traveling show like this one. It was produced at our theater, the Steppenwolf Theater in Chicago, and they were doing an evening of Chicago writers that night. And then just last year, the producer, Drew Richardson, contacted me about doing a show for them in Utica, which I did last year and enjoyed that very much. And this one I'm especially looking forward to. I'm going to be reading a story by Graham Greene, who's one of my favorite authors. And just reading out loud in general is kind of my favorite activity. So it's going to be fun to be able to do a Graham Greene story and to be doing it with you all in Troy. I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, we're excited to have you in town. You have kids. Do you do that a lot with your kids, reading aloud?
Of course. It's a nightly routine, and I can't get enough of it. Sometimes they can, but I could do it forever. Yeah, I actually was in a department at Northwestern University that was nicknamed the Department of Reading Out Loud. It was the Department of Performance Studies, where we studied and presented performance of non-dramatic literature. So although I'm mainly a traditional actor doing plays and movies, I did a lot of work at that time performing poetry and adapting chapters of novels or short stories and bringing them to the stage as performance. So the craft of fiction and simply reading is something that sort of distills the craft of acting for me, and is just a great joy. I just love prose, and I love great writing, and I love who wouldn't love just being the center of attention and having no competition on stage, just being up there and having the audience listen to great literature. It's really fun.
Do you remember what you read the first night that you mentioned doing Selected Shorts in Chicago?
Yeah, it was called Nighthawks, a beautiful poem about summer nights in Chicago. And this Graham Greene story is called Two Gentle People, and I hadn't read it before. I've read a number of his novels, but I hadn't read this short story. It's really captivating. It goes with the theme of lovers and romance, but it's like much of Greene's material. It's very understated and very humane and very personal and sort of psychological. It's not a flashy romance. It's a very understated and it's two people later in life, and like I said, not particularly much actually goes down, but there's a lot about connection and a lot about feelings and a lot about time and age. It's quite captivating.
How do you prepare to do a reading? I have to imagine it's somewhat related to what you do on stage as an actor, but not exactly the same.
Yeah, that's true. I warm up my voice in terms of preparing on the day. I just do some singing or some talking to myself and just make sure that my voice isn't too rough. And in terms of preparing the material, yeah, it is like acting. I just familiarize myself as much as I can with the text, and that means reading it out loud a number of times and just making sure that I can hopefully on the day have the control over the material that I want in order to just read it for effect and read it for clarity and for a connection with the material.
Two-part question. The first, as a Northwestern graduate, have you had a very exciting March with the basketball? And the second part of that question, what originally drew you to Chicago? Because you're from Connecticut originally.
Yeah, well, for the basketball question, that's an easy answer, and the answer is no. I'm just a complete nerd and not a sports nerd. I mean, you couldn't have picked a less likely person to comment on college basketball because I'm clueless.
Well, a lot of those Northwestern people came out of the woodwork in the last month or so.
Oh, really? In support of the team, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was oblivious. I'm sorry to say.
Oh, that's okay.
I was able to catch a couple games, but in the finals. But it's not one of my main pastimes. I'm just a bookish, artsy nerd, I guess. So, as for Northwestern, I actually grew up in Winnetka, which is just a stone's throw from Evanston, where Northwestern is, outside Chicago. I was born in Connecticut, but I moved at a young age to the Midwest. So I grew up in the Chicago area and very aware of growing up of the Chicago theater scene and of Northwestern and its theater department. And as I said, the performance studies department, as sort of obscure as it was actually something I was really already aware of because of growing up there. There were a few very special educators there, like Frank Galati, who was a performance studies professor and got me very interested in adaptation of narrative fiction on the stage, as I would later perform with him in, like, The Grapes of Wrath at Steppenwolf. And he was a Steppenwolf company member already at that time, and I subsequently became one. And after a couple of years at Northwestern, I was already starting to pretty frequently work in the Chicago theater scene. So I actually stopped out after the beginning of my junior year and just kept working and moved downtown Chicago. And that brings me to why I am where I am now. I now live in Syracuse, not too far from you all. I moved to New York City out of Chicago and moved to the Boston area and then moved up here. And I've been here in Syracuse for about 5 or 6 years. My wife is a law school professor, and she was hired by the College of Law at Syracuse. That's how we ended up upstate New York. I'm still based in New York City and doing pretty regular episodic television work out of New York. But for now, Central New York is my home.
Yeah, we talk to a lot of actors on this program, and, you know, people live in L.A. or New York. I have to imagine it adds a degree of difficulty when you're living in Syracuse, although we are glad to have you in upstate New York.
Yeah, I like it here. And it's, you know, the thing about acting is it's difficult wherever you are. Mm-hmm. I mean, the things that are hard about acting are the sort of the uncertainty of when the next job's going to come and having to travel when the work does come. Even if you're in New York or L.A., you might get a job in Canada, you know. So the only added complication of being in New York, in upstate, is the audition process. But as fate would have it, things are so digital these days that I do 90% of my auditioning at home in my home office. I just tape myself with my iPhone and email the tape to the casting directors. And a lot of actors are doing that more and more. Even the ones that are in LA or New York are submitting their own self tapes for acting jobs. So it hasn't proven to be too big of a hindrance being away from New York. It's a schlep. You know, I drive or take the bus from Syracuse to New York with some regularity, and it's about a four or five hour drive. So I've gotten used to it, and, you know, it more than pays off to be able to live here, raising kids in a, you know, less less frantic pace than we might be if we were trying to raise kids in downtown New York or something.
Do you dread doing the auditions? Has that process changed for you in your time doing this work?
Well, doing things at home on your own does make it easier, both because of the distance and also because of that nerve factor. Yeah, I mean, I don't get super nervous about going in to do an audition for directors or casting directors, but it does. The stakes are so high. If they just bring you in for a few minutes and you read the material and then you're sent packing, it's like a very frequent occurrence to just say, "Oh, gee, I wish I just could have done it one more time," or something. And when you're in charge of shooting it and editing it yourself, then there's a lot of freedom to experiment and do it repeatedly until you get the take that you want. On the other hand, there's something pretty special about being in the room with a director and being able to just sort of create some chemistry and talk about the material and get them to respond in the moment and give you notes. So there's a trade-off. But yeah, things have changed quite a lot.
How did you land The Wire?
Well, I was living in New York and I auditioned along with lots and lots of other actors. It was just, I don't know how I landed it. I think it was one of those just great, great strokes of luck, because they could have cast anybody. I mean, there were lots of actors who recognized right away this would be a great thing to be a part of. And I must have struck a chord that even today I don't know what it was. It's like hard to be objective about those things. But they, the producers and David Simon, the creator of the show, just saw something in me that was that resonated with what they had in mind when they were writing the character of Prez Bielewski. I had some previous work with the producers, and I'm sure that helped a lot. I had, David Simon also created and wrote for the show Homicide, and I had done one episode of that, just a typical episodic guest appearance where I was just on one episode. But they, that makes a big difference when you go into an audition, if you're comfortable, have that added comfort of just having met the people before and having some sense that they trust you already as an actor and you don't have to prove yourself just from the ground up. So that helped a lot, too.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, this is going back about 15 years or so, but your character was really in the thick of it in the first episode of the whole series, right? He has this sort of moment where he's put under a microscope to begin with. And I have to imagine, as an actor, knowing that you're sort of in the mix right from the get-go has to be a pretty good feeling.
Yeah, it was. It was very dramatic, and it was a great couple of scenes there where we go to a couple of the other cops go to a housing project and raise hell trying to say that we're in charge and we're going to take things in hand. And things go terribly, terribly wrong. And my gun goes off and I'm trying to put everything in the passive voice. And my gun makes contact with somebody else's face. My character, appeared right then to be a real piece of work. I pistol whip a young kid in the face, and I take some shots up in the air randomly and recklessly. So it was really interesting. Yeah, it was, as you said, it was very confidence instilling, just to know that, wow, it's a cool, complicated, messy part, and could be really interesting.
And that's the code.
Yeah, and it works because it's all about where the buttons are on a phone. If it was a code that involved math or algebra or whatever, these little yo's in the projects wouldn't be able to follow along. But with this, all you gotta do is jump the 5 button. Ain't no math to it, it's just how the phone looks when you look at it.
But it was also a total mystery. I mean, we didn't get the scripts until we were about ready to shoot each episode. So I had no idea what the arc of the character was going to be. And, from the looks of those first couple episodes, for all I knew, my character's problem was, he was a total loose cannon, and he was had a drinking problem, and who knows what. But those turned out to be not such a big part of the whole picture. It was more that the character was kind of frustrated and, you know, lost in the system, which was a big theme of the show. Sort of the individual who gets, he may have good intentions, but gets sort of mired in institutional apathy and, you know, unchanging ways of doing things, even when things are going terribly wrong. So, in a way, that's what, you know, came to ring true much later in the series, too, when my character became a school teacher. Those themes were very much there again for Prez, where he's, you know, he's the little guy who, at that point, is got a little bit more on the ball and is a little bit more in control, but is still, nonetheless, you know, a guy who's, you know, completely at a loss for what to do in the face of this, you know, the monstrous bureaucracy of the school district and city politics that just aren't getting the job done, and he's up close witnessing these kids in the schools who are just being left behind.
Calvin, is this your work? Because it looks like someone else's.
No, I do my work.
Okay, next time, try to remember not to copy Quinice's name at the top.
All right, did everybody get a new textbook? Great. Okay, well, for now, at least you can get those out of sight.
Has the afterlife of the show surprised you? I mean, we're talking about a series that, you know, has been away for a while, but remains, at least if the internet's to be any judge, very, very popular.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't say it surprised me because, I mean, it surprised me somewhat during the life of the show while we were still in production. It just seemed to get more and more of a fire behind it and a real acclaim for the great writing and just for the you know, the pertinence of the social issues and the quality of the show, which was just very episodic or very serialized, you know, just a long form, kind of a long novel on TV, which, you know, wasn't the first show like that, but it may have sort of really cracked the form or set the bar for that kind of television. So, yeah, we saw then that it was really catching fire and people were really responding to it, and it was so exciting to be a part of it. And, yeah, I mean, I continue to hear from people all the time, either renting the show or watching it online or whatever, and, you know, I bump into people on the street who say, hey, I just started the show, and or I'm just through the first season and things like that. So it obviously is, you know, it's got legs, you know. It's just, we shot our 5 seasons, but it's the audience is still growing.
Well, we've been speaking with Jim True Frost, and he'll be taking part in Sunday's Selected Short Show at Troy Savings Bank Music Hall. It's at 3:00, and WAMC is co-sponsoring, and I'll have the distinct honor of introducing the show Sunday, Jim, so I'm looking forward to saying hi to you in person, and thanks for coming and doing it.
Great. Thank you, too, Ian. I'll see you on Sunday. Really looking forward to reading a great story and seeing the folks in Troy. Thanks a lot for the interview, and I'll see you Sunday. Thanks, Ian.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.